Welcome to the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
Yeah, fine. Looks like we're approaching the summer now.
Yeah, it's getting a bit warmer.
Well, sort of. Still a bit cold now and again, but yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah, but you're going to warm things up today because you're going to tell us about when you went to Jamaica and Barbados. So yes. What was that like?
Yeah, I had opportunity to go to the Caribbean. I was actually looking at mental health services. I got the Winston Churchill Travel Award, so I looked at mental health services in Jamaica and Barbados. But while I was out there, I was really curious to find out what's been the impact of the Windrush scandal in the Caribbean. So when I was in Jamaica, I had meetings with a Jamaican minister, Pernell Charles Jr. He's a foreign minister and charge of diaspora affairs. He's just recently changed his post. Also had a meeting with a UK ambassador representing Britain in Jamaica, Asif Ahmed. And then I had the opportunity of interviewing Oswald Dawkins. He runs a charity in Kingston, Jamaica, called the National Organisation for Deported Migrants. And what they do, right, they support anyone that's been deported from the UK, America, from Canada. They provide support, initial support and assistance. And I've got this interview with him, which really explains what's really happening and the impact of the Windrush scandal. And especially, if you can remember, Sinai, you know, the government started to resume deportation flights in February of this year. Mm-hmm. And that ill-fated flight where they deported 29 people. So I was able to have the opportunity to interview some of those deportees as well. But I've got this interview, which I want to share with you, with Oswald Dawkins about the work of his charity. And at the time, they were facing cuts in their funding from the Home Office. And I think I think it's quite good for the listeners to hear this as well.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating. So what we'll do, we're going to go straight into that interview that Patrick did while he was in the Caribbean. So do stay tuned and take a listen.
All right, Oswald Dawkins, President, National Organization of Deported Migrants.
So tell me a bit about your organization, how it was set up.
All right, let me just take you back to the beginnings. The organization was started around 2020, unofficially. Professor Bernard Medley, he had a grant from the EU. And it was a grant to see what is happening where the deportee population is concerned. Out of those workshops, there was a clamor for formation of an organization, and that was the beginning of National Organization of Deported Migrants. As the name indicates, National Organization of Deported Migrants, we advocate, support, provide information, or provide a listening to the returnees. The political correct term, involuntary return migrants. So we assist persons with documentation, redocumentation, you know, birth certificates, you know, TRN, anything, because a lot of persons, when they return, whether it's from the UK, US, or Canada, they come down void of any kind of Jamaican ID. And as you know, to do anything in Jamaica, they need an ID. So we are like the first stop the person would seek information in terms of how they can go about getting a birth certificate. Person would have come down and have stuff, personal effects left back in the UK, and they would want to know how they can go about getting the personal effects. And we also do very important follow-ups. Mm. So we just don't deal with persons immediately when they come down and just start in a job. Mm. So we follow up on the persons, whether by phone calls and or visits.
Mm-hmm. Great. And how many people do you see roughly a year?
Roughly per year, just looking at some statistics here. Since 2012, say March 2012 to around say February 2019, and this is just customs alone. Mm-hmm. Customs, the statistics saying we assisted 239 persons. And this is just customs. And as I indicated, customs persons come down and they have their personal effects left up in the UK. And these are just UK I'm talking about, no? Not US and Canada.
Okay.
So from 2012, the record indicated that we assisted over 239 persons with just customs. When it comes to documentation, it's like double that number since think the 2012, because more persons would have needed assistance for documentation as opposed to the customs.
Mm.
And we do follow up maybe twice that number, the documentation numbers. So overall, you can say, as I said, the U.S. is the largest where persons are returned from, followed by UK. And at least a third of every person that returns from the UK per year have made contact with the organization, have been provided with some sort of service, whether transportation, redocumentation, custom assistance, follow-up, or just a listening ear.
Okay, fine.
And we're having some challenges now where the project is concerned, because it's basically coming to an end. And I was just saying to myself this morning, those persons that depend on the organization, you know, how are they going to, you know, make out, you know, now that we probably won't be providing those kinds of in the service, you know, mainly the follow-ups. You know, because transportation, the person, family may come and pick up the person. So, you know, that's taken care of. But what about the follow-up, you know, somebody that they can call, or an organization that they can call, you know, just to get some counseling, just to vent, you know, so to speak. And as we understand, those services that we were providing since 2012, they will no longer be funded.
Yes.
You know, by the UK, at least at that time.
So what happened then?
Well, we don't know what will happen, you know, because persons really depend on us, you know, to provide those kinds of services. So I'm not sure what will happen.
So what's the reason, what's the reason being given for the funding to start?
Well, I would say, you know,
bearing in mind
what has
that
been
more and more
place.
People are coming to Jamaica.
Yes, well, according to them, two things. We know what is taking place in the UK. You understand, economically and politically. But at the end of the day, regardless of what is taking place in the UK, persons are going to get returned, involuntary return. So those services are still going to be needed. So the reasoning, you know, is that the money is not available anymore. The fund that we used to get funding from, that fund is no longer available. That's the official thing online. However, they are still trying to seek funding, so that at least some of the services can continue to be funded and that we used to do.
Okay. And do you get other funding sources from Jamaican government to the US government? Or?
No, we do not get any funding from the US government. We do not get any funding from the Canadian government. Several Jamaican agencies are stakeholders, what we call stakeholders, also an issue. The Ministry of National Security is the main stakeholder. So they're a part of subcommittees where they're concerned. But in terms of funding, we don't get funding from anywhere else, because UK was the sole funder and our support services project.
Sure. So can you tell me when someone's deported, say from the UK, the recent deportation flight that you were involved in, what's their life going to be like living in Jamaica?
Well, it depends on a number of variables. If the person has strong family background, then that person can fit in where family is concerned. However, that person will still have the challenge of earning a living, generating an income. The person return and they don't have many family, then that person will have a hard time. I have spoken to person. I remember one person I spoke to, and he said he's this person who I spoke to said he was catching on top of catching. So yeah. What happened is his brother is catching with a friend, and then he's catching with his brother.
Okay.
So when he said that to him, it was real revealing, because he said he's catching on top of a catching. So here it is, his brother is catching with a friend, and then he's catching with his brother. And so in that kind of situation, he has to walk real timid.
Yeah.
You know, because any little thing can upset that, you know, that variable there, because it's not even family. So it's his brother catching with somebody, and he's catching with his kind of brother. So I can just envision what that person, you know, thing that must be going on through. So then now you also have the persons now who come back and they have no one, no family, no friends, at least immediately. And so those persons would have been staying in a shelter. You know, most of the persons that stay goes in the shelters for a short period of time, but they do have some chronic cases where persons have been in the shelter for about 2-3 years. And I don't see them moving out of that situation anytime soon. Because again, the main issue, the main struggle that we are faced with is persons being able to generate an income. And for a number of reasons, persons are not able to generate an income. For one, if they go through the formal application process, it may think it comes up that they're deported, and that is going to stigmatize them. We have had persons who have had employment, and when it was found out, you know, they lost their job. So first, it's employment. Housing, and one of the things that we need to talk about is the mental state of a lot of persons. You know, for a number of reasons, persons would have come back to Jamaica after whatever number of years, and just the way of the society, you know, the way they do things, you know, the way they speak, and I'm not talking about accent now, I'm talking about aggressively thing that I'm speaking personally. Can take that along the negative thing online. So we need to actually take a look at the mental state of a lot of persons who are coming down. You talk about persons come down and they have no family thing they hear.
Yeah.
Not everybody deals with it, you know, the same same way.
Okay, fine. And I've been speaking to a number of people who have been deported here. One of the their biggest concern is their fear of their life and safety, personal safety.
Mm-hmm.
What is issue for someone who comes over as a deportee? Mm-hmm. Are they more likely to be victims of crime or them?
I would say that yes. My experience has been that more persons have been victims of crime since returning, as opposed to being involved in criminal activities. And one of the things that we have to take into consideration, I remember years ago they was talking about our persons who returned and was being involved in crime in Jamaica. But then when some research was done, and one of them was by Professor Bernard Edley, it was found out that a lot of those persons that they was talking about, they actually had records here before they left and went overseas. So when they came back, they just went right back into what they was doing. But they lumped everyone into that situation, and when it was not true, it was just some small number of persons. In terms of persons coming back and being victims of crime or being involved in criminal, the statistics, even from the Jamaica Constabulary, it's real low in terms of recidivism. You know, but as you would have been following or heard, years ago they added to say, well, persons were returning was fueling you know, the crime rate in Jamaica, but that has been debunked. Real seriously. And again, in terms of persons coming back and being victims of a crime for a number of different reasons, you know, persons not being familiar with places, and another set of persons who we need to take a good persons who file for asylum. You know, for example, person with a five of asylum in the UK, and they deny them and they come back. So some of those persons also, depending on what the situation was, why they filed for asylum, could have been also returned and been victims in that in that sense. Okay. Well, in terms of the statistics, in terms of persons coming back and being involved with crime, it's real low. Mm. And keep in mind, the majority of the persons who are returning are over 40 years old.
Yeah. So, one of the things I'm a bit baffled about is that the funding that you receive mm-hmm. and the relationship you have with the Jamaican government is on the basis of national security issues. Mm-hmm. But surely it's about rehabilitation and mm-hmm. settling society.
Mm-hmm. And one other thing, you know, since I gave it down to is in terms of the agencies. Mm-hmm. You know, the Ministry of National Security, we understand there's a security issue, you know, person returning, person may have committed crime, you know, overseas. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So, yes, I can agree that there is, would be some degree of awareness.
Yes.
You know, however, persons becoming involved with crime after return, that is not the biggest issue.
Colourful radio.
Right. Welcome back to the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flary, and Patrick Vernon. Patrick, we've just played the interview you did.
Yes.
My question would be, is have you kept in contact with these people since you've come back? And as far as you know, what sort of things have been happening while sure. you've returned to the UK?
Yeah, so as you heard from the interview, Oswald mentioned that their funding was coming to an end at the end of April. They get funded by the UK ambassador in the Caribbean, but the money actually comes from the Home Office.
Right.
And so when I got back to the UK, I contacted a number of media outlets because obviously the government are continuing with deportation flights. There's no real support for the deportees in Jamaica, and the very little support they're getting from the small charity, the funding's been cut, mm. whilst at the same time they launched the compensation scheme. So I contacted a number of journalists that I knew, and BuzzFeed, they decided to cover the story. They contacted me, I shared them the interview that you've just heard. They contacted Oswald mm-hmm. to double check the figures, the nature of the cuts, what that meant for the charity. Then they ran a story which went viral, and at the same time BuzzFeed contacted the Home Office for comments about their cuts to this charity.
Have they said anything?
Within 2 days of the article going online and going viral, the Home Office caved in and they have continue the funding for another year.
Okay, that's
so
brilliant.
I'm still in contact with the charity, but obviously we have to make sure that the government still continues supporting it. And actually, the fundamental issue I think for the listeners is that there is no strategy or rehabilitation policy for deportees. So when people are deported back to Jamaica or any parts of the Caribbean and particularly Africa, there's no real support on the ground. The rumours yeah. that people are getting £20,000 per head and all that stuff is not true. And what we need to have is the Jamaican government and the British government working together to make sure that either we stop these deportation flights, or if they're going to continue, make sure that people are integrated back into Jamaican society.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, they'll be discriminated because they're perceived to be seen as high-risk criminals, which they're not. And a lot of them are suffering from mental health problems because of anxiety, the uncertainty, and they've lost their loved ones, all their families here in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, and
I think that's really heartbreaking. Like you said, they're just sent back to the Caribbean with no support, with a lot of issues, a lot yes. of baggage, and there's nobody really there to sort of take them in and support them. And if charities on the ground in the Caribbean are having their funding cut, it leaves these people vulnerable to a number of issues and mm. problems, and we need to make sure that things like that do yeah. not happen. And it's great that BuzzFeed managed to pick up your story
yes.
and run with it, but then it also makes me question, why do we need to have stories go viral in order for the Home Office to carry on doing what they should rightfully yeah. be doing in the first place?
Absolutely. And I think what we need to do in our other shows is talk about what can we do as activists
yes.
and campaigners to make sure that the government is accountable and we put pressure on the government.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. You also managed to go over to Barbados as well.
Yes,
you mentioned earlier. What can you tell us about what you did while you was there? Yeah.
So while I was in Barbados, I mean, Jamaica is one of the main countries in the Caribbean that's been affected by the wondrous scandal, the hostile environment, the numbers. It's less so in Barbados. But I had an opportunity when I was in Barbados to interview Guy Hewitt. Guy was the ambassador for Barbados in London last year, and he played a key role with a number of the high commissioners. If you can remember back then, that Theresa May refused to meet any of the Caribbean leaders.
Yes.
So Guy played a key role in working with the 15 CARICOM countries who are based in London to put pressure on the government around the scandal. And so I had the opportunity, met Guy in Barbados. I interviewed him to reflect on, from his perspectives as a former diplomat, what does the scandal mean 12 months on, and what more should be done?
Yeah, okay, brilliant. We're going to go into that interview right now. So that was Patrick telling us about when he went to Barbados and met Guy Hewitt. We're going to play that interview right now. So please take a listen and stay tuned to the voices of Windrush.
Colourful radio.
So I'm here in Barbados. I'm with the former High Commissioner Guy Hewitt. You're back home now.
Enjoying it, that's
fantastic. So tell me, I got to know you through the whole Windrush scandal last spring actually. We're approaching the 12th anniversary, the first anniversary. Can you give your reflection 12 months on?
Well, first, Patrick, let me welcome you to Barbados. I know the Caribbean is your home and you're travelling around, but it's good to have you here.
Yeah.
I would say 12 years on, I'm disappointed that this matter has not yet been completely resolved.
Yeah.
I feel that there was an injustice that took place, and I'm saddened to read in the press and the media that people are still being deported, some who really belong in the United Kingdom, because that's where they've grown up, that's where the families are, that's where they have been living all this time.
Yes.
I'm disappointed that the UK government has not shown the compassion I think it should have to make sure that these cases have been completely resolved quickly, that people who have suffered injustices have been able to get their lives returned to normalcy. Mm. I know that the compensation is still to come.
Yeah.
The lessons learned are being done.
Yes.
But when I read the National Oil Office's report, when I read of the Public Accounts Committee report, there are things that happen to West Indians that never should have happened, not only to West Indians, but any person who is resident in a country that holds itself as a member of the UN Permanent Council, as a defender of people's rights, of a defender of democracy, of justice globally, as one of, we can say, the global powerhouses or forces for good.
Yeah.
I expected better of the United Kingdom.
Yeah. I've spent the last week or so in Jamaica, and I've spoken to deportees. I've had meetings with Colonel Charles, the Foreign Minister, as well as the UK High Commissioner. And one of the key things I'm really concerned about is these people who are deported back to Jamaica from Britain. Most of them have spent most of their adult life in Britain. They are treated almost like third-class citizens, and they're treated the word is used as a security risk. There is no rehabilitation at all. What do you say to that?
As I said earlier, I think it is a scandal that people who live their lives in the United Kingdom, who qualify and are effectively British, are being returned to the Caribbean out of convenience. The UK no longer wants them or feels it's their responsibility, but they have a moral responsibility to these people. A, because they would have lived there, they would have paid taxes.
Yeah.
Any vices that they acquired, I think they acquired in the United Kingdom.
Yes.
Their children, their families, extended families are there. Why are they being suffered the crisis and a catastrophe of being sent back to a country that's not home?
Yeah.
As you say, a country that does not have the resources to cater for them, to integrate them, where they are more likely to re-offend, more likely to fall into problems, more likely to become part of a crisis, a wider crisis in Jamaica or in the Caribbean, than to say to them, let's look at ways of ensuring that they can be properly integrated back into the society in the United Kingdom.
So in the UK context, there is a very strong public perception in the community that countries like Jamaica and others may be in a form of collusion. There's been rumours about them being paid £20,000, £30,000 a head for each deportee. I'm not sure if that's true or not. But being a former diplomat, how does governments work with the British government in that kind of context of international negotiations, trade, aid, etc.?
One of the things that happened last year during Windrush, the leadership, Barbados, the St. Kitts and Nevis, a commissioner who worked very closely with me, to a large extent, we were able to do this because Barbados, St. Kitts and Nevis, and along with the Bahamas and Trinidad and Tobago, we do not receive UK aid. Yep. We are not official development assistance beneficiary. So we could take a strong moral and ethical line knowing that our governments or our countries didn't have anything at risk. For the other countries in the Caribbean, including Jamaica, who are recipients of UK aid, who are dependent on the UK government for certain imperatives and needs in their country, it makes it a lot more difficult. They sometimes are constrained in their ability to say to people, this is simply wrong, no, this should not happen. Unfortunately, diplomacy sometimes can be compromised, can be seen to be a compromise of one's standard simply because you can't say what you want and should want. I am reminded, however, on this. I remembered when there were West Indian cricketers who went on the rebel tour of South Africa during apartheid.
Yes.
Michael Holden, whom I revere because not just of his cricketing abilities, but his ethical and moral stance, said, when he was offered $1 million to go to South Africa, he would not sell himself or his country for a mess of pottage. Yes. He was saying that there are certain things that money should not buy. And I think in a case like this, we as countries and as people have to say when something is wrong, it just is wrong. And the deporting of people from the UK who have lived there for decades is just wrong for the UK to do to any country in the Caribbean.
Okay. So again, reflecting 12 months on, what do you think was the turning point in how the public opinion got behind the whole Windrush campaign and forced the government to apologise, not once, not twice, not three times, but numerous times?
I think what they recognise, and I have to commend the UK government at the time for realising it, they knew when they had really done wrong or when public opinion had turned against them.
Yes.
I think every day Britons recognised that the people who were being persecuted could have been their neighbours, their friends from school, people, their colleagues at work. These were people who came from the Caribbean decades ago, worked hard, paid their taxes, were good British citizens who were being targeted and denied the rights that they had earned. And I think when the public came out in furore, when you saw your parliamentary petition break records in getting the 100,000 signatures in just days, it said to the government, y'all are on a losing wicket here. And I think they did, as happened with the English team during the Test Series, they knew that they were up against superior odds and superior forces.
Again.
And they capitulated.
Yes. So my final question to you, the UK government, Home Office, will be launching very, very soon, very imminently, the compensation scheme. What would the scheme look like for you in terms of being fair and just?
I think I...
And what should also happen in terms of making sure that people in the Caribbean know about it?
Well, I'm glad you raised that point. I have a lot of confidence. We had the opportunity to work with, before I left, with Martin Ford, QC, who's advising the Home Secretary. And I think he is going to do a very thorough job. But one of my concerns that I raised with the Home Secretary before leaving the UK, and I raised again with the British High Commission since being in Barbados, there is no outreach across the Caribbean. There needs to be consultation. There needs to be outreach. The British government has its offices in Jamaica, in Barbados, in Guyana, Trinidad, Tobago. It's expanding in the region, as the Home Secretary committed to. at Chogham last year, at the Commonwealth Summit last year, they need to reach out to people, for people who have been affected by Windrush, not just to get compensation they deserve, but for those who still are languishing in the Caribbean, those who are still separated from their family and friends in the UK because they've been barred access to return, that needs to be regularized. And a year on, we are still struggling for those persons to be given their right and due process to get back to the UK.
Okay. Well, I know that you're going to come back to the UK very soon, and hopefully you'll be around for Windrush Day, 22nd
June. I would look forward to being doing that. And I hope you do get back to Barbados as well.
I hope to,
as we do a reflection over the next few months on Windrush, the scandal, and what it has meant for us in terms of individuals, Barbadians, but also the relationship between Barbados and the United Kingdom.
Okay, that's great. Thank you.
Thanks again, Patrick.
No problem. All the very best.
Colourful radio.
Welcome back to the Voices of Windrush with me, Sinai Flery, and my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon. You was just listening to Patrick's interview with Guy Hewitt in Barbados. Now, what we want to do with these shows, the Voices of Windrush, we really want to get the community involved. If there's topics you want us to discuss on the show, if you've been a victim of the scandal, are you a Windrush activist? We would love to hear from you. You can tweet my co-host, Mr. Patrick Vernon. What's your Twitter handle?
@PPVVernon.
And you can also tweet myself, Sinai Flery. That's S_FLEARY1, or just tweet Colourful Radio and we will be discussing your issues on our show. But for now, thank you for listening. This has been the Voices of Windrush.
Down the way where the nights are gay and the sun shines daily on the mountain top, I took a trip on a sailing ship, and when I reached Jamaica I made a stop. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way, won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around, I had to leave a little girl in Kingston town. Sounds of laughter everywhere and the dancing girls swaying to and fro. I must declare my heart is there, though I've been from Maine to Mexico. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way, won't be back for many a day. My heart is down, my head is turning around, I had to leave a little girl in Kingston town. Down at the market you can hear ladies cry out while on their heads they bear. Ackee, rice, salt fish are nice and the rum is fine any time of year. But I'm sad to say I'm on my way, won't be back for many.
Travel and movement into the UK, particularly migration, has always been a problematic issue for specific groups of people who have chosen to settle here. The recent Windrush scandal highlights the ongoing challenges relating to identity and belonging, made me think about what my grandparents endured with migrating from Grenada in the West Indies to England. My great aunt, as with the ladies and gentlemen who contributed to this piece, left their homes in the 1950s and chose to settle here for opportunity and a quality of life better than what they'd left behind. Each individual account takes you on their personal journeys and experiences of leaving home in the tropics for the cold streets of England. I invite you to enjoy my collection of stories entitled Windrush.
Grenada, St. Patrick. 80 years old. I'm in this country 54 years. Arrived in the UK in 1961, February the 15th, and I come here to join my husband. I felt terrible when I had to leave home because I had left my two kids behind, and it was not very easy to leave them, but coming to join my husband, so I had to leave them and be with him. I didn't expect anything that I didn't hear about coming to the UK. I know it was cold. I know it was different culture and, let's say, different races. So I make my mind up for anything that I, you know, find in this country. I didn't have a problem mixing with any other country people, or race, or religion, or anything. I know what it was all about.
My name is Melanda Henry, and I'm from Jamaica. And I came to this country in the 50s. And ever since, I've been working until I retire. And when I'm going to get retirement, the Queen said, well, you work very hard in this country, and good service too. So I'm a British Empire Medal. Well, I just choose to come to the UK for a better life, better living.
A bit thick, what? Britain's worst fog in years, a real Victorian pea super, followed up by wintry onslaughts of rain, ice, and slashing winds, has the United Kingdom talking about the weather a bit more than usual.
At first, when I reach the Shepherd's Bush Green and see the bushes in the green there and how cold it was, I said, what have I done to myself? Leave the sunshine and come to woodland, come a freezing, frozen. Yeah.
Come to England on a boat, and I had a rough time. When I come to England, I couldn't see where I'm going because all the fog, it was dark night. They say, you reach in England? I said, no. I said, I want to go back. I can't see where I'm going, and cold and freezing. My reason for coming here, because my hubby sent for me, and we get married and have children, but they didn't want no children. Maybe they want one, but I have six. But I didn't expect to see all the snows and everything on the ground, dark, you can't see where you're going, you know? So I used to stay and cry, you know? I used to be sad.
My name is René Charles. I'll be 88 soon. I left Trinidad to come to England on the 9th of July 1958. The reason I could tell you the date is because on the 13th, when I have 4 days on the sea, I had my birthday. Well, it was very sad to leave, but when you are a young man growing up and you haven't got any job in your own island, you have to seek job where it is. And that is the reason why I am come to England. That is one of the reasons. My wife came to meet me in England. I did get married in Trinidad, not here.
Let's say the British people is the one that didn't really want, let's say, black people in this country.
The simple fact of the matter is that we do not have sufficient houses, jobs and schools for our own people, let alone immigrants, be they black, brown, yellow or green. It simply boils down to a question of numbers.
Well, of course, there are far too many immigrants in this country. When will the public wake up to the fact that you cannot put a quart into a pint bottle?
I didn't have any bad treatment coming here because, like, it's different color. It's black and it's white. And I know, like, the white people, they would look at you as a black person because they don't really used to black people. And I keep my color. You know, I know I'm black and they white. So I have no problem with that because prejudice is something that is everywhere. It's even in our own color. So I was not, you know, thinking of being as the white and I'm black, that, you know, any segregation between us. I was quite happy in that way because I don't get in their way, they don't get in my way. I never had no problem with anyone saying, oh, you're black, this, or you're black, that. No, I didn't have that.
The British people was not quite happy about black people coming to this country. Teddy Boys then was in operation the day when we came to Jamaica, from Jamaica to Great Britain. When I was going to school, my teacher always told me about Great Britain. And when we come here, it's a shock to me. I thought it would be a better off country. I thought it would be far way better off than what it is.
You get good and bad. Some people like you, some don't like you. Don't like the blacks, especially if you have children.
No dog, no cat.
No Irish. Yeah. My landlady, I had a rough time, but I couldn't have a bat. She locked the bat. I can't go in the bat and have a bat. I stand cry. Then she gave notice for me to go. I go by the next one, and I come out to the fire and jump in the frying pan. And I had it very hard, very, very hard, up to this day, you know. But I get to like it.
London is the place for me. London, this lovely city. You can go to France or America, India, Asia or Australia, but you must come back to London City.
You know, coming to England is a great experience. We had our ups and downs, some good, some not so good. We had our clashes racially with the Teddy Boys. We had our clashes with renting situations with so many citizens in this country. And of course, we have many difficulties sometimes coping with the conditions of this island, because our island was much different in the way of living. When I had my first boy in this country, I was being told no children, and I was being cast out because of certain conditions. You expect this when people don't know you very well and they are getting in contact with you and they want to know you and they feel you're coming to take their country. But I love England very much. I don't come to take the country. I come to work here and to build the economy of this country. That was my purpose coming to England. And also to improving my general education. And that was a very nice thing to do for any human being.
That was not like here. It was horrible winter. From now, November month, it's cold, foggy and everything. But now you don't see fog. And it's not, I would say it's that cold. So the weather had changed. The British people had changed. So there is a lot of changes in this country to when I first came here. I wouldn't say I have any importance to be like back in the Caribbean. Number one, my mother is not there no more. And I have all my family here, my grandchildren, my children. I'd go back to visit, like I still have relative there. But it's nothing important there for me. I quite like it here. I enjoy it being in England. So I don't see myself going back to Grenada and leave. No.
Well, I've been back in Jamaica in 2013. And when I reached Jamaica at the Great Grand Hotel, Otto says to my granddaughter, I said, where granddad are now? Is he in Britain or in Jamaica? He said, granddad, you are in Jamaica now. He said, what? Woo! Hey! He said, this is a different Jamaica from the one I live here. Britain changed up a lot for the of the experience about black coming to this country and build this country. Black come here, they don't live in just rent house only, they try to get their own back, their own places. And that was a great lift to Great Britain. I'm quite happy in Great Britain now. I love it.
I worked in so many different places here, getting experiences and getting many a growing type of conditions in my life with varied characters and personalities. Some like you and some don't like you. I have my children here. They're grown up, they go to school, they educate themselves. And they could have done better, some of them, but I think it was quite nice. I did well in this country, you can say. Job was easy to get. You leave a job and you get a job tomorrow. So different as it is now, and I've seen a lot of changes over the years. It's a pity some of it is not very better. But, of course, that's how life is like. I love this country more than I love my country, I'll tell you why. Because of the facilities and the type of conditions that we enjoy here.
When I reached in this country first, I think I should be still in Jamaica and not in Great Britain in the freezing fog and, you know, and bushes in Shepherd's Bush Green. It was all sheep and pig. When we go in, I was living in between, not far from Labrook Grove, and over there I had a lot of friends in Labrook Grove. And when the teddy boys, them see them step out on the road with their sword in their hand, they say the boy, they call it sword. It was cutlass, we call it in Jamaica, that we work on, used to work the farm. They run. I said, I'm going to come with a sword.
London is the place for me. London. This lovely city. You can go to France.
The colourful stories told by the different vibrant rich voices have painted pictures of fear, pride and joy in their experiences of leaving the familiar home they knew and loved in search of a new home which turned out to be cold, hostile and unwelcoming. The question I ask is, have views regarding immigration really changed over the last 70 years around specific groups of people who choose to make England their new home?
Radio.
This is my island in the sun, where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me. Oh, island in the sun, will to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sand. As morning breaks, the heaven on high, I lift my heavy load to the sky. Sun comes down with a burning glow, mingles my sweat with the earth below. Oh, island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sand. I see woman on bended knee, cutting cane for her family. I see man at the water's side, casting nets at the surging tide. Oh, island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sun. I hope the day will never come that I can't awake to the sound of drum. Never let me miss carnival with calypso songs philosophical. Oh, island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand, all my days I will sing in praise of your forest waters, your shining sand.
To break this band is a long funeral causing clutter and crossfire. I'm making fun. The strongest survive and the weakest run. Because
the road is the war on an evil day. On trouble I don't want to talk, but I've got to say.
Any steel band man only bent here to break his man.
There's a long funeral from the Royal Hospital.
Dancing, teenagers romancing, it's Baba Boom.
time again to hear the people sing boom, boom, ba, ba, boom, boom, a boom, boom festival, boom, boom, ba, ba, boom, boom. Time again, you hear the people sing, oh.